Marty goes back in time to see his mom in her prime. His dad is weak as he's always been, but finds true strength from within. And welcome to episode number 4 of Talking Pictures Alliance with your host, Kristen Ashton, and co-host Jeff Reynolds. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm good. It feels like we haven't done this in forever, but I love that feeling in a way. You know, like it's exciting every time we get to talk about these movies.
It's true. It's amazing how much happens in 2 weeks because I'm used to seeing you every week, but now it's a 2-week stretch and oh my goodness, life changes. And things have been going well for you.
Yeah, things have been great. I know a majority of my 2 weeks was watching this movie. I watched it 4 times.
4 times? So what does that bring the total watch count to?
I don't know. It's well over 50, I'm sure. Especially the times that this movie's on TV. You know, you're scrolling through the channels. You find it on TV. And I do think, though, that that's going away. Because we don't have TV. We don't pay for cable anymore. Do you guys pay for cable?
No, not at all. But I know exactly what you're talking about, right? Because back in the day, they would show movies and big blockbuster movies on television. And your parents would be scrolling through and they'd go, oh, you gotta watch this. And then you're sitting there watching Indiana Jones Temple of Doom for the first time.
Yeah, and you know, I think the biggest culprit of that, for me at least, is Shawshank Redemption. I feel like that film is on TV all the time, and I feel obligated to watch it when it's on. I own the movie. You can get this thing like, you know, you can stream it on a million different, you know, services. But when Shawshank Redemption is on, you know what? I'm going to spend some time with Andy Dufresne.
Dude, right. I think we all have dramas. And mine would be Titanic. I know it's a joke movie for the most part. But your Shawshank is my Titanic. And today, we're not talking about either of those in full. We'll mention them, of course, because they're great. But today, we're talking about Back to the Future, the 1985 hit classic. It was the top-grossing film of that year. And it follows the adventures of Marty McFly. He befriends he's already friends with Doc Brown. He gets sent back in time to 1955, meets his parents in high school, and kind of messes with the future in the process. So to start us off, Jeff, what are your thoughts about this movie? We know you love it. We know you love it and can probably recite it word for word.
I can. I do love it. And I think a lot of it has to do with nostalgia, obviously, growing up watching this movie. I mean, 1985 might be surprising to some people to know that this movie came out that long ago. I mean, it doesn't seem that long ago, but it's an older movie. And I know a lot of our generation grew up watching this movie and enjoying it. And I mean, it wasn't necessarily a generation that was created in, or a movie that was created in our generation, rather. So it's interesting. I think that there's so much to love about this movie. There really, really is. The script is just amazing. It definitely is telling, and this is something I wanted to ask you about, because this is considered by a lot of people to be a blockbuster film, right? It is this movie that was huge at the time. And I really do believe that film blockbusters, whatever that, you know, title has been given to films, have changed over the years. And, you know, you've got your sequels, you got your new Jurassic World movies coming out, you got these other movies that are coming out that are considered blockbusters now. But you look at Back to the Future and you're like, wow, that was considered the blockbuster of its time.
Yeah, right, because it was kind of wacky in a sense. There'd been time travel movies before, but they found a way to make sci-fi human, I guess, because sci-fi is, I feel, is one of those genres that's really kind of hard to nail down because it's either really weird 2001 Space Odyssey levels of you're going to be analyzing this for the rest of your life and still never settle on an answer, or it's kind of inhuman as the horror of it, like an alien, and there are all these boxy shapes, and sure, you can connect with the horror of the people, but you don't feel the warm fuzzies like I feel this one kind of brings in.
Yeah, and I mean, you could do a ton of research out there. Like over the last couple of weeks, I've been looking at, you know, what makes this film so great? Why do people love this movie? Why do I love this movie? And there's a general consensus on a bunch of things. And one of those things is that the script is really good. And it's good in the dialogue, but it's especially good in the fact that it sets everything up perfectly. And one example that a lot of these reviewers or, you know, just people that are talking about this film say is at the beginning when the woman that is giving the flyers for saving the clock hour, right? She gives this flyer to Marty. Why? Why does she give this flyer to him? Because he's gonna need it. And that's a theme throughout the entire movie, is like nothing happens without a reason and a purpose in this movie. And you're asking yourself as a viewer, how is this going to pay off? I mean, when you've seen it a million times, you can go back in and watch and go, okay, how does this action pay off in the end? And it's a really interesting way to watch the film.
Holy cow, right? Foreshadowing up the wazoo. And Kilmarnock brings an interesting perspective to that, because he tweeted that other than it's being a perfect movie with every single line of dialogue being used at some later point, he jokes that if it had a BMI score, it would have 1% fat content, maybe even less, because like you said, everything is used. Even visually, you see things that are then put into purpose later on.
Yeah, and there's tons of Easter eggs in this movie. I mean, a ton. And that's, you know, for video game fans like us, that's a huge deal, right? I mean, you can watch it over and over. Like one of my favorite Easter eggs that some people may not have even seen is that the mall at the beginning of the film is called Twin Pines Mall, right? Well, when Marty goes back in time, he crashes one of the pine trees on Old Man Peabody's farm as he's driving out. Then at the end of the film, you can just notice that the sign that says the mall's name says Lone Pine Mall instead of Twin Pines Mall. It's tons of Easter eggs like this that are just great.
Yes, and it makes you, I guess, kind of appreciate how much work went into the script. It was a question I had while watching, how many iterations of this story did the writers go through in order to cover that much ground, both before the time travel and after? Because I don't think there's a single plot hole that's really left unresolved.
No, not in the first film. I mean, the first film is real tight, is real, real good. And, you know, it also is super relatable, right? Because this feels like a real town. When I see that mall parking lot, it looks like a mall parking lot when I was growing up with the JCPenney and, you know, like this whole thing. It feels like a real town. And it also draws on what we think a real town would feel like in the 50s, right? When he goes back in time, this is the stereotype version of what we think a town would be like in the 50s. It fits a whole bunch of ways that draws the viewer in. I mean, it's like drugs. It's like crack. You want to watch this, you're like, this is exactly what I'm thinking it should be, and you don't want to stop.
No, not at all. And what's even better about your point with the town is that we don't know how big the town is, how many people there are, but within cities even, you have those areas like a mall parking lot, like a town square where most people go to hang out. It doesn't matter how big the city is. There are always those points of reference. And like you said, because they were able to capture that, it doesn't matter how big the rest of the city is. We all know. And then we've seen the old pictures of towns we grew up in and how clean everything looks, right? So that makes me wonder then, how do you think that rose-colored glasses kind of thing plays into this? Because we see the city in 85, and there's porno theater there in the town square, and there's graffiti and trash. There's even the bum sleeping on the chair when he comes back. But in the 1950s, we go back, and it's clean. It's brand new. Nothing's dirty. But there's still some really questionable stuff going on back there.
Yeah. You know, rose-colored glasses, I think, is a really good way of putting it. I think you said it perfectly there. I think that it's different, right? It's just a different world. And what makes it intriguing is that it's not different in the end, right? These people are doing the same thing. They are living their life. They're trying to, you know, get to a school dance. So maybe that they can have a illegal drink and maybe that they can, you know, try to get laid at a school dance or something like that, right? I mean, it's the same, it's human beings living in the same way in a different time period, and that's what's so intriguing and crazy about it. I mean, the 50s, I feel like I have this view of it being super clean cut, like that very first second that he's walking around the Hill Valley the Hill Valley like community center there, you know, like that square mile of craziness, and you know, people are working out and you know whatever, and you know, people are walking and Mr. Sandman's playing in the background. It's like a Fallout almost, where you're thinking this is like what everybody thinks it's supposed to be, but then you delve into the story and you're like, oh, these people are just living in a different time period.
Exactly, they've got the same kinds of things going on. There's still, I mean, the TV, right? When Marty says they have three TVs and the kid goes, wow, you must be rich, there's a hint of that financial disparity. That's, it's there in every time period regardless. The mom wanting to drink, do drugs and go necking in the car, even though she tells Marty you shouldn't do that. She doesn't like girls who do that thing when she's older. It cracks me up. And I remember asking my grandparents one time if they could go back to the 50s, would they ever? And without skipping a beat, my grandma immediately was like, nope, I would never go back to the 50s. And that kind of got me thinking that, you know what? Maybe humans are humans regardless of the time period they grew up in.
Absolutely. I think this movie is a super testament to that. I think it definitely is. It's interesting because quality of life changes, right? I mean, from the 50s to now, yeah, there is a, like you said, a hint of disparity where they can't own more than one TV in their house. But that's because TVs were crazy expensive and they weren't accessible, right? Like they were handmade, these things. Now machines make these things. You can have a TV in every room if you want. I think I have a TV in every room. You got Google Homes. You got all this crap all over the place. But it's something that I do think we take for granted in our current ecosystem, just this technology and where we are and the efficiencies that we gain as human beings because of technology. And you can see it in this movie when they go back to the 50s and they say stuff like that.
And how funny is it that nowadays you don't even need to go back to the 50s, right? Because a lot of people our age, cell phones are the big thing. We grew up without cell phones, as crazy as that is to say, and now we have smartphones that have revolutionized everything. So that it makes me excited for the future, right? To kind of see where that baseline standard of living gets to.
Yeah, but are we going to be those old people, Kristen, that are like, I don't know why that kindergartner has his cell phone, because when I didn't have a cell phone until I was a sophomore in high school, and you should have seen what that phone looked like.
Maybe, right?
Yes, the answer is yes. I'm going to be that person.
You're gonna have your kids and you're going to be like, no, you're going to have to wait until you're this age to get X. And that's it. I didn't have it. You're not going to have it.
Yeah. Why? Because I said so. That's why.
Exactly. We're going to be fair. And that's how it's going to be, by doing exactly what I say. I love it. Now, so we go back into the past. And we immediately meet his parents. And I love the scene where Marty runs into his dad and they're both doing the same hand on the head thing and look up when Biff comes in. And this kind of, now the writer talked about how he came up with the idea for the script because he ran across his dad's image in a yearbook, and his dad was a class president. And he remembers the class president of his class being a jerk. So we wondered if his dad was a jerk and if he would even have liked his dad in the past. So let's talk about our own parents, Jeff, because this movie deals with the breaking of the facade that your parents are people simply trying to get through life the best they can, and that what happened to them in the past led them to become the people they are now. So did you ever have a moment where you were like, oh man, my parents, they're just people. They're my parents, but they make the same mistakes everybody else does.
Absolutely. I think that I had a lot of moments like that. And it didn't really happen until I went to college, right? Because you're really under the wing of your parents until that time. And then, you know, at least for me, things opened up and, you know, my parents, I could realize that they were real people. I could also realize that I was turning into my parents when it comes to things like leaving the house. And my mother is terrified of leaving something plugged in or leaving the garage door open, right? Now I am terrified. And I can remember the moments where I was so annoyed at my parents, where we would be driving out of the neighborhood, like off wherever we were going. And my mom would be like, we have to turn around because I think I might have left my curling iron plugged in. So we turn around, we come back to the house. I do the same thing with Kayla now. We'll be driving out and I'll be like, listen, I know this is really annoying, but I got to make sure I turned off the stove or make sure the faucets are off. Or, and I mean, I see my grandmother do the same thing. So this happens, you know, this definitely happens.
Oh, absolutely. I think it was, late high school, early college, right? Because you're out there on your own for the first time in the real world, as free as you've ever been. And you start to realize just what they've had to deal with through their lives. And I think probably the biggest moments where I've connected to my parents is they had a family of six of us. And here I am with just Kyle and I having finances talks. And I remember those nights they would go into the bed. We were not allowed to be part of those finance talks, right? They protected us as best they could from money stuff. But geez, to have those talks now and finally get what was going on, it's something else, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think that it's the stuff you think you have so many problems. I was really just talking about this yesterday with some of my buddies. Like back in the day when you're doing whatever in high school or even college and you're like, man, my life is so hard. I got problems. You really don't. And this goes back to saying, are we going to be those people? Kristen, yes. This comment that I'm making right now makes us, you think you have problems, but you don't really have problems until you get older, kid.
Exactly. You've got, 60 more years to go? You get to 30, 40, and you tell me that Johnny, who you want to date in 10th grade, is worth it. You tell me that. But my dad always had this saying, I can't never get anywhere. And that's one that all of us kids always run around basically screaming and doing little arm things. Whenever anyone in the family is feeling down, we just send them that text. You could do it.
That's funny.
We could do it.
Oh.
So we're there. And you want to talk about time, I see here. That time is everything because it's a time travel movie after all.
Yeah, you know, that is really another thing that's incredible about this movie is that it is a time travel movie that is about moving through time, right? And it has an incredible amount of suspense related to the characters not having enough time. And it's a movie about time, which I think is crazy. You know, and one of the moments where we have bought this, we have drank the Kool-Aid the entire film. We are on the edge of our seats waiting to see if Marty can make it back to 1985. We are waiting for this to happen. And we're sucked into it so much that the line when Marty says, what am I saying? I have all the time in the world. I have a time machine. I can make this happen. It's like, wow, we have been sold on this aspect of the movie the entire time. That he's running out of time. Everything's got to be perfect. And then this line comes up and it's really eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right at the end. But then the car shuts down and it resets it. So he can't quite do the thing he wanted to. But this thing is wonderful because it's kind of like in Twister. Time is the villain. They have literally made time the villain. And not in a classic, you know, going to ruin your life kind of way. But if he doesn't get back and he doesn't catch that lightning bolt, that's it. Game up. He's stuck in the 50s.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's a really, really good point. That kind of segues into this next thought here, which is that a lot of people, and myself included, if I actually think it, think that the stakes in this film are ultimately really small, right? I mean, the stakes are you're going to live in the 50s if you don't make it back, you know, like, you know, so what? The world's not going to end. Nothing's, you know, nothing crazy happens. No aliens come and invade. Like, you're going to live in the 50s. But we're rooting so hard for Marty because the writing is great. The direction is great. We believe that this kid needs to get back to the 50s. We believe that Doc Brown is the key to make that happen. It makes it feel earth-shattering for us, but in reality, Marty just, you know, he's got to get back.
Right. It would simply be a family drama if he didn't make it back. His parents would wonder where he went to, sure. And maybe the doc would be able to invent something in a few years' time. And it's a time machine, so he can go back to whenever he wants to. It's not like he can't go back to the moment he disappeared and his parents don't have to live with the repercussion of a son who didn't return. So, yeah, in that sense, they really did a great job with these characters. And I see that you wrote here, we care about them. I think every single one of them is extremely human in everything they do.
Yeah, we care about them a lot. I mean, even his mom, his dad, their relationship, when they finally kiss at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance at the end, I mean, you find yourself cheering for that moment. You're super happy that all of this worked out, it played out. And then he says, you know, when some kid lights the rug on fire a few years from now, go easy on him. And you can tell that the parents are kind of like, what the hell are you talking about? But it's charming. It's really great. You care for these characters. And it all builds up because one of the greatest quotes I saw talking about this film and people's opinions of it was that Zemeckis shoots a school dance as if it was a car chase. Like, you're at a school dance and the thrills are real. The tension is high. You care about these characters and you can shoot it like that because these people are sold. I just think it's really, really well done.
Dude, that line blew my mind. I didn't realize that he'd filmed it like a car chase. But you're not wrong, right? Because you're following our one guy, Marty. And it's a back and forth and back and forth until things are finally set up and he's on stage. And hopefully they're going to kiss. And Lorraine gets taken away a second time. Which, when I first saw the movie, I thought was, I didn't really like it. Right? Because why? We just saw George punch out Biff. Why wouldn't he then immediately stand up for Lorraine? But I think I've come to understand that the first stand-up, that was scripted. And he went through with it. Good. But the second one is him on his own without anybody behind him standing up for the woman he loves.
Yeah. Amen. That is just, it's very, very, very well done. And I think it's so cool how the future changes because of that, right? He writes his book. Biff is basically a guy that washes his car now instead of steals it and crashes it. And just again, every single line leads into a payoff in the end of this film. And it makes me as a viewer of this movie feel like that I have invested my time wisely because I'm paying attention and things that I'm paying attention to pay off in the end.
Yeah, and maybe part of that is the rewatch value, right? Because you can go back and each time you watch this movie, you notice something new. And I think great movies do that. Airplane as a comedy does that. Each time I watch Airplane, I always notice something new. And one of my favorite things that I didn't notice in Back to the Future until I was older was when Doc Brown is talking to the cop by the clock tower and he pays the cop off. He bribes the cop to leave him alone. And it's such a little thing, but it blew my mind.
Yeah, there's stuff like that all over this movie. Easter Egg City. It's really great. And then I actually really like... Now, I don't think we want to spend too much time talking about the sequels, but I do think that it is a super genuine, awesome moment when 1955 Doc Brown sends Marty off into the future, and then Marty comes running around the corner, and 1955 scientists who created a time machine can't fathom what had just happened. Like, I just sent you into the future. I know, Doc, I'm back. I'm back from the future. What? I mean, it's just so crazy cool.
And that speaks to the performances. I mean, Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown is one of the best mad scientists, and he's not too over the top. His facial expressions sell the character, if that makes sense. They're nuts, but they're genuine. And my favorite one of his is when he makes the model of the town, apologizes that this amazing model isn't to scale. They wind up the car, they send it off, it catches on fire, and then runs into the wastebasket. And his reaction sells that entire scene.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's really important to talk about. The fact that he's a crazy scientist, but it is not a super caricature of a crazy scientist. It's believable, and you can see why the town would think this guy is a crazy scientist, but he's just a loving dude. Like, you care about him, and you don't really know why. I mean, but you do. It's great.
Yeah, he's kind of like a father figure, I think, for Marty. And because of that, we can buy that relationship. It never felt weird, you know? And it sounds like, from what I read, the writer spent a lot of time developing the Marty-Doc relationship so that it was believable and it was genuine. And you wouldn't see these two together and go, why is Marty sneaking out in the middle of the night to go help an old crazy scientist man who squandered his fortune on who knows what?
Yeah, and if you think about the plot, like the main plot of this movie, and you drill it down to the most, you know, the highest level you can look at it, it's about a crazy scientist who creates a time machine, and he has a friend who's in high school who helps him get this job done. They get stuck in the past, but then they have to find a way to get back to the future. I mean, it's a crazy concept. If you're pitching this movie at a you know, luncheon with a whole bunch of directors and you're the writer, it's hard to sell. So I think that, like you said, the writing and the relationships are what really make it.
Dude, totally. It's so wacky. I mean, because he shows up too in the past. They think he's a spaceman because apparently every kid has comics back in the 50s, which is wonderful, right? So they set up from the beginning that he looks like a spaceman. And what's great is Marty hears this, of course, and he uses it later in another wacky scene where he sneaks into George's bedroom dressed as an alien from the planet Vulcan and plays loud music in the poor kid's ears with technology this kid's never seen before.
Yeah, it blows his mind, right? The Walkman, the whole thing. And us looking back on the Walkman like, oh man, that's really old.
Yeah, so this brings up a question I had for you in regards to these references, because they put us back in the 50s. Both environmentally, the town's clean and building design and the clothes and everything, but also we have these exchanges with people as Marty kind of is learning to adapt to this 20-year time or 30-year time difference. The tab, you can't open a tab unless you order something, a Coke free. I'm not going to give you, you got to pay. If you want something, you got to pay. The life preserver. Like, so. But it doesn't feel weird, right? It feels natural and it's funny. So what are your thoughts on how they balance the two to build this time travel world?
They definitely could have hit us over the head with a whole bunch of this, you know, 80s to 50s kind of, you know, vernacular and everything that they're using to kind of just, you know, beat it to death that he's from the 80s, but they don't. He accepts it pretty fast. It freaks him out, obviously, but because it is this blockbuster film, they've got to move on to the next thing. And I think they set it up really, really well. And that it is that scene you're talking about when he's in the it's not a bar, right? The like breakfast joint that's kind of like Denny's, the diner. The words are not on the tip of my tongue, clearly. But when he's in the diner for the first time and, you know, he sees Mayor Goldie Wilson, right? Just like in there and the way that people react to him and the way that people react to, you know, Biff. He's this big, you know, hit guy at a high school that just happens to be 45 years old. But like all this stuff is just crazy. And he buys it really quickly. And so we do as the audience, I think.
That's a great point, right? They trust Marty to be smart, and they trust the audience to be smart with Marty. And they found that sweet spot where you get it right away. They've already explained time travel. They proved that it's possible with Einstein. And now we're back in time. And thank goodness for Marty being able to adapt quickly. There was an interesting quote. I was watching a little bit of that Back in Time documentary, and they interviewed Dan Harmon, and he mentioned that Marty doesn't have a character arc. He's the same Marty at the start of the movie as he is in the end. What are your thoughts on this? Do you agree, kind of, sort of, 100%?
I think his arc lives in his relationship with his family. So I think that I think Dan Harmon is a genius. And obviously, I think I agree with this statement because he is Marty throughout the entire experience, but he looks at his parents differently at the end. I do think that there's an arc there where at the beginning when they're saying, you know, your Uncle Joey's stuck behind bars, another line that pays off every line does. But when he goes back and he sees that his parents are happy, when he sees that what he did was a good thing, I think that affects him. And I think that ultimately moves him forward. What I do agree with Dan Harmon on this statement is, though, that in the second film and the third film, it's the same Marty, right? It's the same story. It's the same thing over and over again for this poor guy. But I do think that if you were to take the first film on its own, he does have a small bit of change and arc in him when it comes to his parents and understanding that they're real people.
Yeah. And two, he plays guitar in front of a crowd. We know he auditions, but the dance is basically that paying off for him. And so from there, I think we can believe he probably gains a bit of self-confidence. But here's the question then too, right? So he's changed the past. He goes back to the future. His parents are healthy, in love. They're flirting with each other all the time. Biff is some loser who got put in his place. What about the memories? Does Marty, because it seems when Marty comes back, he doesn't have any new memories. It's just the same old Marty from this previous timeline.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I can see that now. I had never really thought about that. Totally. I mean, in the memories that, I mean, if you go one step even deeper, what memories of his parents, what memories that his parents have of Calvin Klein, right? Also, you can delve deep, and this is a rabbit hole that you never really want to go down with time travel movies, right? Because there's a lot of things that people say about time travel movies where, in reality, if you traveled into the past and you got out of your car and you stepped on a bug, that could ultimately lead to the end of the universe. That is what Doc Brown's talking about when, you know, there's a rip in the space-time continuum and, you know, it just ends. Because that bug could have been picked up by some bird who could have flown in some place and done something and then blah, 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 right? So I think that it leads into this conversation of how come Marty's name is still Marty in the future? How come all of this stuff happens? Maybe his parents still wouldn't have had kids because of the experience that they had at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance. Maybe that changed the way, you know, maybe George is some big badass now and doesn't want to have kids and all this stuff. I mean, you could go down this rabbit hole forever when it comes to time travel movies.
Oh, totally. And those are so much fun, right? Why isn't the oldest son named Marty? Yeah, you'd think that the firstborn son would be pretty special, so they would dub that child. So that is a very, very fun question. And it seems like every interaction Marty has is related to something he's seen in the future, so that's why we don't get a weird sort of time paradox, right? Mayor Goldie. Of course, yeah. Goldie's going to become mayor with or without Marty's help. Doc thinking up time travel. That happened with or without Marty being there. So you do have to wonder, are there things that happened that weren't supposed to happen that Marty influenced?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a crazy amount of theory crafting you can do with that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and also, so this was something I noticed that I thought it was kind of a romantic thing that happens. So at the beginning of the story, you have George and Lorraine, they're talking, they're explaining their story, so we get that set up for the narrative later on in the film. And Lorraine describes that her and George have that first kiss, and she knew with that kiss that it was meant to be, even though in this future, George is a loser, the mom's a boozer. I mean, she's just drinking the whole time, pure straight vodka into that cup at dinner, at dinner. And George won't even look at her. Like, they're clearly not in love, but it was still that true love's first kiss, or true love's kiss, right? And it happens again, and we still have the outcome where they end up together as long as they kiss. So do you like that idea that there are certain things in time that happen, that have to happen in order for X to happen?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that kind of goes back to the first episode of Talking Pictures Alliance when we talked about the Matrix, right? And we're talking about how Neo is having a conversation with Morpheus at one point, and he says that he doesn't believe in fate because he doesn't like the idea that he can't control his destiny. He can't control what's happening in his life, right? So this statement of this film is saying, yeah, if this happens, then fate takes over, right? So if this was a thing, if, you know, fate has destined you to be with this person, if this adds the layer of, but only if this happens, right?
Yeah, totally. And in that case, we kind of have fate as this gloss over mechanic. It's not abused in any sense. Like, everything feels like it fits. It doesn't feel too weird. But you're right. You have fate. If this happens, we know if this happens, then X happens, regardless of what kind of future X has.
Yeah, and think about it. That's a weird quality for a time travel movie to have, is fate. You know, and a lot of the ones that we really like to watch, like The Terminator, it has that same quality where, you know, Sarah Connor, there's this whole fate aspect of it where if she lives, then, you know, this is what happens and all we have to do is save Sarah Connor, so on and so forth. So it's a weird quality because in reality, we all like to think if you travel back in time, you're about to screw up everything that happens in the future because there's no way you can recreate everything perfectly, you know? Just for example, like the fact that that Marty says to the future mayor Goldie Hawn in the diner, he says, "You're going to be mayor someday," and Goldie Hawn says, "Mayor, yeah, I could see that I could be mayor someday. I like the sound of that." And he's like doing his whole like mayor thing. Would that push him to become mayor sooner? Would he become president? Would he not win because maybe he's overconfident now? Like, you know, you just, nothing will play out the same way because it's happening so differently.
Yeah, and that ties into that, the wonderful moment at the end. Before the lightning strikes, Marty and Doc are having their final thing in the past, their final talk, and Marty's trying to convince him, just hold on to the letter. Don't throw it away. And Doc's going on his rampage about how you shouldn't try and change the future. But Marty shows Doc the picture of the three siblings and everyone's there. And Marty's talking about how his dad laid out Biff. He'd never done that before. He says, "My dad has never done that before." And in that moment, we see a look of shock on Doc's face because I think he realizes that, you know what? Maybe you can change the past without ruining the future. And I think ultimately that's what leads to Doc deciding to take the chance, tape the letter back together, and get ready for the future.
Okay, so that was my question to you, because it was something that even watching it over and over again, I don't fully understand. So he has the letter in the future, but we're not supposed to believe that Doc went back to the past to get the letter before he ripped it up.
That's a good point, right?
He tapes it back together is what we're supposed to think.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He puts it in his pocket after he rips it up and then, you know, pulls it. He held onto it that whole time. So I guess we have to then believe that this is the first iteration of the loop. And now the loop has to keep going, or else Marty won't be in the future where his parents end up happy.
Yeah. That's really what I would hope would happen, because if he went back into the past to get the letter before he ripped it up, then he would have time traveled before the first time Marty time travels with him, and that would be a whole nother space-time continuum thing. You know, chat has a really good point, speaking on the thought of if Marty has an arc or not. There is a little bit of an arc from Fibble is talking about how he isn't so macho enough to crash his truck because he decides to not race, right, in the second film when he's doing the whole the racing, drag racing part of it.
When he's called Chicken.
Yeah, so that's another little arc. I wouldn't go as far to say he doesn't have an arc. I think it's moments like that to think that he does change, but it's not drastic.
No, there are definitely some things, but you're right. It's not a big thing, right? I kind of see later Marty in 2 and 3 as Aladdin. The first movie, standalone, fantastic, don't touch it. But then the other two come in, and Marty just keeps doing the same thing. Because even in the third one, I think he's called Chicken by one of the Western outlaws. And he reacts to it the same way he did in 2, and fights. So, you know, they find that character, and then they just keep repeating the character rather than building on it.
Yeah, and part of it is like, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. Wacky adventures and time. And even Christopher Lloyd's mentioned that he would have liked at least one film where the two of them went to ancient Rome.
Wow.
Yeah. And what time period of ancient Rome, right?
Is it in the first movie? This is so funny because I just watched it a million times. But I think it might be in the first film when Doc Brown talks about, and if I could go to any time period, I'd want to go to the West, because I feel like I would really, that's a time period I always wanted to visit. And that is, I think it's in the first movie. If that's in the first movie, then that really plays, it's a perfect example of how every line pays off. Even they're thinking 3 movies down the line, you know, or maybe it was that line that inspired the third film. Whatever it is, it's cool.
Oh, dude, right. And that would, of course, speak to the team that stayed with it, them paying attention to the script so much. And I heard, too, that people even study the script with how concise it is and how it covers everything. But I
absolutely
do. But yeah, so now that we're talking about time travel, where would you go, Jeff? What time period would you want to see? Would you have any constraints you'd want to have with that time period, considering vaccines and stuff really recent?
Do I have a restriction to where I can only go to one place? I think that this question works. It works that way, because the answer is really every time. I want to go see it all. But
top three. I think give me your top three. If you had to, you only got to see 3 things in history or the future, where would you go?
I think that I would definitely go to the future. I think I would start with going to the future first. You really can't mess stuff up in the future. So I would go to the future. Well, I guess you could mess the future of that future up anyway, and check it out. Obviously, play as many video games as I can, you know.
How far into the future would you go?
Oh, I don't know. I guess 100 years past when I would be alive to kind of see what it would be like. Man, Kristen, it is so tempting to do, you know, to find out the sports scores, to see your family, to try to figure out if you can fix your family if something happened. Like, there's it's so tempting. So that's the first place I would go. I guess if I was going to go to the past, I would want to, you know, as turmoil as the time period was, I'm intrigued with the 40s and like the late 30s. I'd love to see, you know, style. I'd love to see, you know, all of that type of time period. And then I don't know. I guess I'm more intrigued with going to the future than the past.
That's fantastic, though. Okay, so yeah, so you go back to the 40s, future for 100 years, and what's the second stop in the future?
Oh, man, the second stop would probably be super far out, like maybe 1,000 years in the future, to just see what in the hell is happening. But I don't think the flux capacitor goes that far forward. Well, I guess it would. 1,000 years would be year 3,000, so it would fit on the time circuits.
That's true. We'd have to get to what, 9999 before we'd have to install some new gadgetry. And we know he upgrades it.
That's right. What about you, Kristen? Where would you go?
Oh, let's see. Right now, I think I'd go check out different battles of the past. I'd want to see the storming of the Bastille to kick off the French Revolution. I think, oh, that would just be something. Let's see. Oh, what about Caesar crossing the Rubicon? That would be so cool. And then I think I'd like to see one of Napoleon's victories. I don't know which one specifically, but I would like to see that.
A history buff. I like it. Well, we could just build two time machines and I'll meet you right back here in 2018 and we can talk about all the stuff that we see.
Exactly. It was amazing and it was fantastic. And of course, you'd want those stipulations, right? You wouldn't get sick. You wouldn't get seriously maimed. The time machine wouldn't get destroyed. It would be great. If you get like this 12-hour period, nothing bad's going to happen. This is a fantastical time travel.
Yeah, and chat Trappy in the chat has a really good point saying that don't want to go anywhere toilet paper still has splinters. So the future it is.
Oh my goodness. There's such nasty stuff back in the past.
I'm telling you, I wouldn't build a DeLorean as a time machine. I'd build like a pickup truck and load the back of your truck with like, you know, stuff you might need.
That's true. All of the comforts. And maybe as soon as it falls out of the time machine, it disintegrates. So there's no trash.
Yeah. Hopefully there's no extra trash. You don't want to be duplicating things.
Exactly. And Jeff, then, so you're time traveling. What's your favorite mode of time travel? How would you want to time travel? Do you like machines? Do you like a mind time travel?
Like days of future past? If I had to pick between like Doc Brown or Doctor Strange, like being able to like, you know, shift universes and stuff. No, yeah. I'm all Doc Brown. I'm like, I want to pack my bag with my stuff that I've got right here and I want to put it in my car and I want to just, you know, go 88. I mean, let's talk about 88 miles per hour.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Right.
And that is totally, totally a piece of pop culture that I don't think will ever die. I mean, when you go 88 miles an hour in your car, of course you're on the Autobahn because that's where the speed limit is, 88 miles per hour. Everyone listening out there. But when you do, you start thinking about, well, maybe that flux capacitor is shining.
Dude, right. And Kyle and I were talking about this during the film. There are so many rules that they give you to this time travel. This isn't just we can time travel, accept this as a fact and move on. We got 1.21 gigawatts. We got 88 miles per hour. We need some source of nuclear power to even get the thing to go to the past. I mean, all over are these rules.
Yeah, yeah. And you start thinking about like, okay, so if they travel back in time with a DeLorean and someone was to see the DeLorean, would that and how would that influence the design of cars and technology and all this stuff moving forward? I mean, Marty doesn't do a really good job of hiding it. He just puts it behind like a Hill Valley development sign and covers up with a couple of bushes, which clearly over the 3 days that Marty's in 1955, nobody was working there.
That's a great point, right? Maybe it was a 3-day weekend, but it wasn't because he was there for a full week. But he did. How long did it take him to get to Doc, I guess? 3 days?
Yeah, I think it took a couple of days, right? Because he blacks out all this stuff. Where's the DeLorean? Oh, I hit it. Not really well, but I hit it.
It's covered by tree branches. We got this. We'll just assume the 1950s, they weren't too bright. You know, it was a simpler time.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so would you use the DeLorean specifically, or would you have something else you'd like to use as your machine?
Well, yeah, if you're going to travel back in time, you might as well do it in style.
Fair enough. So no telephone booths for you, right?
No, how about you, Kristen? Are you more of the whole, like, what is it, Doctor Who traveling? Doesn't Doctor Who use the TARDIS, and that kind of works like you go inside of it and it takes you fancy places without having to go 88 miles an hour?
That's true. I don't know. I hot tub time machine was very silly, so I always I always thought it would be funny if some ridiculous thing is what took you back to the past, and you know, it Yeah, so maybe like a hot tub or something.
No, I love that. It's a, like the time machine, you know, there's could be everything. The toilet, the time machine toilet. All you have to do is sit on the toilet and it takes you in the time machine.
Exactly, and that's how you know it's going to be a comedy, because nobody takes toilets seriously. Unless
right.
it's some pretentious film shown at Cannes and it wins all of these Palme d'Ors. Did you ever see Time Traveler's Wife?
No, wait. Doesn't that have Rachel...
McAdams?
McAdams in it. No, I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either, but I thought that one was taken very seriously. It's this romance story, and the guy's got something called chrono displacement, and he can't stay in the same time.
So, then there's the other movies that are like that, like these romantic movies where, and I have seen this movie, but I can't remember the name. It's got Harrison Ford in it. And
yes.
Yeah. And she just lives forever, and she lives through the time periods. It's called About Time. It's some movie about that. And she lives through all these time periods and she never dies. So it's got like a time aspect to it too. So if you're interested in that type of genre, that might be a movie to watch.
Oh, I was thinking about the Amish one, but no, it's Age of Adeline.
Age of Adeline.
I did not That's know it. Harrison Ford was in that movie.
Well, I just spoiled the whole movie for you.
There we go. Well, I probably wasn't going to watch it anyway, but let's just say when it comes to very serious romance movies, they normally put me to sleep. I'm not a fan, because most of the time the films could be cleared up if the two characters had an honest discussion about what happened, discuss their feelings, accept that people are inherently flawed, and move on with their lives. But no, someone's right. got to be the bad guy, and it's not me, because I could cry. So get out of my face. We're done with this.
I love it. That's hilarious. There are a lot of movies, and there are things that you can watch if you're interested in Back to the Future. Kristen, you have some really good ones here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Frequency with Dennis Quaid and Henry Caviezel is really, it's one of those movies where they took a lot of work with the script. It's kind of corny now. I rewatched it, but it's got some really cool time travel stuff, and it's about affecting your future, your present. The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, if you like reading science fiction, it's a classic. Looper was pretty darn good. The Terminator classic, X-Men Days of Future Past, and Timeline by Michael Crichton. I really like those.
Yeah, I think the one that really stands out to me is Looper, because that came out of nowhere for me. I didn't know what it was about or anything, and I actually liked it. It's a very interesting story about time travel, and it's definitely an action film. It's got Bruce Willis in it, right? So
yeah.
It's real good. I put just two things down on here. This might be a guilty pleasure. I'm not really sure if this is considered a guilty pleasure or not, but I do like Stephen King books a lot. Maybe it's because you can just turn your brain off and, you know, read this, and there's some really good stuff in there. But yeah. If you're really kind of paying attention, you know what I'm saying. But 11/22/63 is a really good book that falls into that time travel category. And it also talks a little bit about what we were saying about how you time travel and how that happens. And without giving anything away about this book, basically, there's a guy who runs a diner and finds that one of the basement rooms in his diner transports him back to a certain period in time if he goes in the room. And then he decides to do what he can with this power and so on and so forth. So 11/22/63. Also, another Bruce Willis film, The Kid, about time travel. This is another guilty pleasure. I like this movie. I think it's so, like, it's definitely a charming movie. He goes back in time and he tries to fix himself. And it's actually, it's very good. Watch it if you haven't.
Yeah. And I'd never heard of 11/22/63. So I'll have to check that out. Stephen King is a great author. I don't think you need to have any guilty pleasure there. He's very talented. The Kid, though. No, I remember when I was younger, we got that movie on DVD. It's a very family-friendly film. So if you go in with that mindset, it's rediscovering the innocence of childhood, right? Because I think as we grow up, we often forget just how serious life can make us, because there are so many trips and pitfalls along the way. So being able to see that young self that doesn't think about the future constantly, it's very heartwarming.
Absolutely. And we talked about that a little bit earlier, too. So, I mean, it all plays in.
Exactly. And then it teaches you about dipping French fries in your chocolate milkshake. And if you've never done that, do it, because it's delicious.
Absolutely.
All right, Jeff. Will this movie stand the test of time? I don't even think we need this question here, but take it away.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does more than any movie we talked about on this show yet. I think it definitely has the best shot of standing the test of time. It's the characters. It's the fact that you're traveling to a different time period. There's not a lot of CGI in it. I mean, there's a lot of really cool documentaries you can watch on this based on, how they used practical effects to make the first Back to the Future happen. So I think it definitely does.
Yeah, totally. And I'm going to say, I watched the clips of the guy, who's the original Marty McFly?
Oh, shoot. I forget his name, but I watched them as well. It's very different.
It's Lovitz, is it?
I'm not sure, but if you don't know out there, originally the film was cast as someone else playing Marty McFly. And when the film was wrapped up and in post-production, they decided to change the actor that played Marty McFly, and now I think they made the right choice, obviously, because it's a movie that was on in everybody's house, basically.
Yeah, Eric Stoltz, there we go. But you're right, I checked out some of the stuff and I read up on some of the story, and Eric apparently is a very, very talented dramatic actor, but they needed the screwball comedy, and it's not jarring, but it is a very different film when you take it dramatically, especially since it deals with your mom falling for you.
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of comedy in there for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, we're dealing with some really weird stuff.
All right. It's a different conversation altogether. If it's not.
Oh my goodness, I don't know if I ever want to have that conversation on this show. We're too serious at that point. Can you fall in love with your parent? Maybe. Right. All right. What's next, Jeff?
Looks like the next film we'll be watching for Talking Pictures Alliance is Inglourious Basterds. A lot of you probably have seen that out there. If you haven't seen it, you can find it on Netflix or any of your favorite streaming apps out there. Inglourious Basterds was directed by Quentin Tarantino and is amongst amazing Christoph Waltz. Probably top 10 performances I've ever seen in film. I think he is incredible in this movie. So it's definitely something to check out, and you can check it out on Netflix. We want you all to be watching these movies with us and sending us all of your thoughts about these movies. Even if you've seen it before, it's fun to go back and watch these things and put them back in your Netflix queue. So Inglourious Basterds is next.
Oh, yes. And I dare say that is probably my favorite Tarantino film. I enjoy his style, but that one. But then I also love World War II. So I think it was just that amalgamation of incredible storytelling combined with a time period that just, it gets me. And if you
totally.
Yeah. And you're right about Waltz. I'd never seen the guy before until that film.
Oh, he is so good. I mean, he's done some other good stuff after that, but I still think that movie, I can't wait to talk about it, because there's a lot going on in there. And it is the textbook example of how to create tension and have it live as a tension-filled moment for way too long, and it creates way more tension because of it.
Oh, yes, right, the milk scene at the start, and that's where I'll end it. Oh, so good. Okay, so if you'd like to share your thoughts, what are your thoughts about Inglourious Basterds? Send it our way. You can tweet at us at TPAcast, or send us an email, talkingpicturesalliance@gmail.com. And before we go, happy Father's Day out there to all you fathers.
Yeah, happy Father's Day. Celebrate by watching some movies with your family. Lots of good movies out there. There's a lot of good movies that are in theaters right now, too. And just kind of piggybacking off what Kristen said, if there's any movie out there that you've been watching that you want to talk about, anything to do with films, shoot us a tweet.
Yeah, I think we've seen most the big names. I would say Incredibles 2, if you've got a family. It's really, really fun time. All right, Jeff, where can people find you?
You can find me right here on Talking Pictures Alliance. We record the show every other Sunday at 12 noon Pacific.
Awesome. You can find me at @KristenAshton_ over at Twitch, Twitter, and Instagram. And as for the show, you can find us here on Twitch, twitch.tv/DreamDestroyer. That's DRMDESTRYR every other Sunday. We're back July 1st with Inglourious Basterds. And if you'd like to support the show, send us a buck or two over at patreon.com/TPAcast. And with that, any final words, Jeff?
1.21 gigawatts.